Good evening, everybody. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, thank you very much for inviting me to share my poetry. I haven't done this very often, so I'm a little bit nervous at the moment. But I'll get started. Most of the poems that I'll be reading come from the collection Edible, which is published by Bear Brewer. And there's a kind of a theme that runs through the poems, well, called Edible, food, family, memories, and the way those things connect and interconnect. So I will start with a poem called Edible Memories. Edible memories. The heart honeycombed, fingering fermentation, fruiting footprints, nibbling small talk, words dangling, the quiet flux, sugaring hope, digesting a little piece, unfolding a little piece of clotted expectation, lemony moments of sticky sweet joy, this indelible banquet, apple pie warm, feast your eyes, take a bite. The next poem is called... Thank you. I keep being told you've got to slow down, breathe. The next poem is called Mutant Muffins. I never could follow a recipe. In school cookery class, my layered Victoria sponge cake resembled a sunken Yorkshire pudding. I forgot to add sugar. Dyspraxia undiagnosed for another 40 odd years. Still a liability in the kitchen. I'm a trier. Mashing up multiple recipes, changing ingredients prescribed, producing batches of cocoa and cinnamon muffins that shapeshift in their tulip greaseproof paper cases, tops split open like an erupting volcano, leaking molten chocolate lava. Culinary carnage. Another brisk walk to M&S. Blueberry muffins or chocochino, factory made. A perfectly formed pack of four. Thank you. The next poem is called Bread. And when I was growing up in the 60s and 70s, bread was a pretty huge part of our diet. We had just about anything you could put on bread we had in our family. My granddad used to like bread and butter with salt sprinkled on it. And I had an auntie whose favourite was sugar sandwiches. And so you name it, we'd put it in a couple of between a couple of slices of bread. So bread and jam. Jars of sticky preserved jeweled fruit lined up on the cupboard shelf. Strawberry, pineapple, apricot, mixed fruit, gooseberry, blackcurrant, raspberry. Memories of growing up in the 1960s and 70s spread on thin white slices. Cotton wool soft, the processed loaf packaged in that familiar mother's pride greaseproof wrapper. Many years later, beside the hospital bed where our mum lay after the catastrophic stroke, she tells us she craves a slice of bread and jam. And I'm reminded how when we were kids, she also spooned strawberry jam onto cold Yorkshire pudding, a favourite dessert, and pancakes, stirred it into semolina, rice pudding, turning creamy milk puddings, like childhood memories, cupcake pink. Marmalade. Like wholemeal bread, a bit posh, so reserved for breakfast toast in holiday B&Bs. Tomato sauce. Resembling oozing stage blood when squished in folded bread. A staple savoury after-school sandwich while watching Scooby-Doo. Salt and vinegar flavoured crisps. Layered thickly between two buttered slices. Oh, the crackle and crunch spearing our salmony gums. Bread, a thread, back to what was, who was. If bread was a poem, it would be family. Thank you. The next two poems also family. The first one is called On the Idiosyncrasies of Heritage. My glorious godmother, your oldest sister, Annie, passed years before you. I adopted her milkless, sugarless tea habit as my own, share her middle name, her childless status. We apologise for our grief, or rather the display of it. After we lost you, beloved Patricia Ellen, your favourite heady-scented freesias, lilac, lemon, white, became my preferred flowers. I peel a rectangle of grief from the bones. One of your 14 siblings, your last surviving sister, was Brenda, wisdom blessed, my second mum, until cancer claimed her too. I'd always hated the ugly taste of the ginger biscuits she loved. Now they're my favourites. Grief swells, sonorous, lit. The three of you, so close, strong, vibrant women, a rare and glittering constellation. In the mirror, I see you all in me, this strange genetic history. Thank you. The next poem is about my dad, my late dad, and it's called Dad's Docky Bag. And docky is an East Anglian word that means lunch, which is carried in the docky bag. So Dad's Docky Bag. Bags once crafted from smooth hand-woven straw, kept in their place by a wide buckled strap, carried the weight of social status, rights hard won by agricultural fen labourers to lunch breaks without docked pay. Now cut from heavy canvas, yours contains docky, lovingly prepared by mum. Faded blue Tupperware, packed with doughy white mother's pride, cotton wool soft, margarine squares, sandwiching pink luncheon meat or mottled hayslip, nestles beside a flask of milky tea. A day of taxing physical labour awaits, where repurposed fenland sustains Kingsdyke Brickworks. Like father, brothers, friends, you have served your apprenticeship, attending evening classes at the local technical college to become a skilled craftsman, a master of bricks. Working shirtless, weathered skin, sunbaked oak bark, your tar-thick thatch of coal-black hair won't be tamed by Brill Cream. When you ride the 5 miles home on your trusty push bike, brick dust has infiltrated clothes, flesh, scalp, eyes, nose, lungs. The Whittlesey kilns never dropped below 90 degrees Fahrenheit, firing continuously from 1923 to 79 to produce bricks from clay layered more than 150 million years ago. You lived a mere 72, but I imagine your gentle genetic imprint stoically marking the fabric of Jurassic clay. The bricks you made, creating houses, homes for generations to come. Love ignites in my bones, burns red hot, firing continuously, scorching through my lunch break. Docky consumed, I returned to work. Thank you. This poem is the last one in my edible collection from Bear Boer. For anyone who can't see, I'm going to show you the cover because Michelle designed the cover and it's the most beautiful cover. And I was just so happy to have this published as my first collection, so it means the world. So this is the last poem in edible, and then I'm just going to read a few from a new collection that I'm working on at the moment. So first of all, this is the final one in edible. There is still space in the basket. / spoilers. We are all memory-stained cellophane, wrapping ourselves in the confetti weave of broken dolls, quelling unquenched thirst, dislodging, distorting, picking up the scent in a dark, silent room, keeping the eggs warm. Milky sunshine, glissando words, what pastry dust failed to show us, dancing with ghosts, cupcake pink, creatured, making it new. I give you my heart on a plate, custard yellow with a rosebud pattern, recurring, recurring, recurring. Never look back. Unfurling, we are softer now, molten red, gauzy lidded, hungry for colour. The eye sees what it wants to see, and next week will be a week of somethings. Thank you. So the final few poems are from a collection that I'm working on at the moment. The first one's called Nobody Listened. Do you like what you see, what they saw? Or does it require more seasoning? Tell me again, the story of how she was neglected, abandoned, locked away, forgotten, unable to leave the house, and no one listened, so jammy loops of words, syllables snaking, kept her company, kept her safe, until she became visible once more. But it was already too late, and although she was granted freedom to leave the house, she was unable to leave the house. So she wrote stories instead. Wafers of memory, unwrapping susurration, unfolding rapture. Because the words, true companions, those honeyed constellations, had never deserted or condemned her, every trickling consonant and glossy vowel licking vociferous shadows. Next one's called These Shadow Lips. Parched, I am holding you in the palm of my hand. Spoon-fed, something shining in the mud. I saw you and wanted you. Or was it really me wanting you to want me? The difference is crucial but easily overlooked. Acts ripple down the generations, splitting the pod. Undigested grief never gets smaller. So you have to open yourself up. Make yourself bigger around it. The sound it makes, a jumble of jam-packed treasure hunts, kissing it better. The words sliding out, growing your own demons, your blue eyes sky soft, and I am scattered, indivisible, picking at threads. We are all wandering in the dark, always wandering, waiting for the fog to lift. Colours that dance, a girl singing. The next poem is called My Vulva and I Used to Be Friends. But these days we barely speak, hardly acknowledge each other's existence, and I miss our chats, me squatting on the bathroom floor, you reflected back in the mirror, propped between my thighs, open wide, checking all areas remain operational, in full working order, ready for action. Now I can't bring myself to look. Once, guests were regularly invited to enter the vestibule, come inside and stay a while. You've changed. Of course you have, so have I. I used to enjoy prodding and poking, but since estrogen, obliterated, left the building, skin thins and tears, lips rip and snag, paper cuts, and I'm violet. There's just two more poems. The next one is one of my ranty poems. I do get quite ranty, and they find expression in some poems. So this one's called Freedoms. An SUV, more at home on safari than in tight urban streets, blocks the pavement, and I feel familiar anger rising, exchange vitriolic words with an oblivious driver. And in return, I'm a slag, slut, bitch for daring to challenge testosterone. Like the time that bully was making your life a misery when we were kids, so I hit him. Like when you were being sexually assaulted in a club and I slapped the perpetrator and got thrown out. How dare a girl, a woman, and my anger solidifies, the weight of it. But words are not fists, and although I don't wish him harm, I do. If I was Wolverine, I'd relish dragging surgical sharp steel talons along his shiny pride and joy, hastily dissolve the image in mental acid, as slices of memory resurface like an erupting volcano, of negotiating carelessly parked cars, having to push your wheelchair over undropped curbs, jolting your fragile bones, jarring sensitive nerve endings into the path of screaming, speeding traffic. Because selfish drivers behave like their freedom matters more than pavement users or anyone else. Although I doubt this mental sequence is processed or even considered, and if they lost their sight or their mobility, perhaps they might perceive the world differently, but no point arguing. So I step away, my anger burning a hole in my chest. Tell myself things will get better, but I know they won't, because some humans are selfish tossers, and the lesson learned is lessons are never learned, and I think they should put that on my headstone. Thank you. Right, this is the last poem, and thank you so much for listening to my poetry. This last one is called There's a Ghost in My House. Although I didn't realise at first, until I saw it by chance after leaving for work one morning, and something made me turn, look up. There she was, framed in my bedroom window, smiling and waving, waving and smiling. Startled, I ran back along the path, unlocked the door, raced up the stairs, heart pounding, fearful, curious. Flung open the bedroom door, but the space was empty, so I must have imagined it. However, since then, I see her often, in the same place, but only when I go out, like we're sharing the house. She never leaves a trace, and eventually I've got used to her being there. But yesterday, walking home from work, I began to notice others staring through windows on every street, sometimes just a faint silhouette or half shadow, a fragile thread of presence, sometimes clear and strong with sword sharp edges, which was more disturbing. And I struggled to make sense of it until I realised we all share our homes with ghosts. And if you don't believe me, next time you leave your house and walk away, look back. You'll see them watching you, smiling and waving, waving and smiling. Thank you.